I'm going to call the meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 3, roll call.
John Steinbrink.
Here.
Monica Uhoff.
Here.
Steve Komorkiewicz.
Here.
Clyde Allen.
Here.
Mike Serby.
Here.
Quorum being present. Item 4 is a presentation of a donation by the Kenosha Noon Optimist Club to the Therapeutic Recreation Program. Evening, Dennis.
Good evening. Dennis Duchesne, 8710 36th Avenue, Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'm here tonight to as a member or president of the Kenosha Area Noon Optimist Club, and we would like to make a donation to the Discovery Program. We've been involved with the program for a few years now as the Optimist Club. Bring Santa Claus there over the holiday season to visit with the kids. Some of our members enjoy working with the kids. This year, the donation is going to be used for the kids to go to an outing to the Brewers game, State Fair, and I believe the Milwaukee County Zoo. So at this time, I'd like to present Aaron with a check from the Kenosha Area Noon Optimist Club for $1,000 to help offset some of the great programming she does.
I'm Erin Winch, the director of the Therapeutic Recreation Program, and I just wanted to thank Dennis and the Kenosha New Optimist Club. Without their support, there is no way that we would be able to take our 50 or 60 clients with disabilities into the community and get the support that we do and do these great outings and adventures. So we just want to say thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Dennis. That brings us to item 5, public hearing. And tonight we have item A, which is consider authorizing construction of final paving improvements in the Whispering Knoll subdivision and final resolution 13-15, levying special assessment for said project.
Mr. President, tonight this resolution comes to us by virtue of a notice of intent that the resolution that the village adopted last year. And this is an unusual resolution, and the work that's being taken, considered a part of it is unusual, but it is within the guidelines set forth by statutes in order to pay for public improvements. The Whispering Knoll subdivision is a 40-lot subdivision. It was began development in 2005. They had not substantially completed the development when the real estate market collapsed in 2007-2008. And subsequently, the development has kind of limped along until where we're at today. In Pleasant Prairie, when new subdivisions are approved and they're platted and we reach a developer's agreement with a developer to do that, the improvements for that subdivision, the village is accomplishing a number of things. One is that the ordinances anticipate that if development meets the standards of the village and it's constructed by those standards and it meets the zoning requirements, the land division requirements, it goes through the public hearing process. And if it's a good development, it should be able to proceed. But the village ordinances also require that residential development cannot be subsidized by the existing tax base of the village. The taxpayers, every taxpayer at some point, and it might have been a long time ago, paid someone to improve their parcel, whether it was the farmer that decided to subdivide the land in some of the really old areas or early developers. As a town, we at that previous town boards, this is dating back in the 50s and 60s, had agreed to do public improvements for developers where the town would assess people who bought lots the cost of paving or sewer or water. And at that time what was happening is the town was accruing a lot of debt in order to do that. At the time we incorporated as a village and we were no longer under Kenosha County zoning and development, the village made a conscious decision that development should only pay its own way, that tax-paying residents of the village should be expected to pay for their improvements when they're initially constructed, but no one else's. In the case of roads, sewer, and water, once an improvement has been constructed to the village specifications, and this has been true since 1990, once it's been constructed to village specifications and it's been approved and accepted, formally accepted by the village of Pleasant Prairie, then that improvement becomes the village's responsibility to maintain and replace, repair, modify, whatever it takes to make sure that those improvements are working. In the case of water lines, those costs are borne by the ratepayers who pay water bills. In the case of sanitary sewer lines, it's borne by the sewer utility. In the case of stormwater lines, that's being borne by the clean water utility. In the case of roads, streets and curbs and gutters and signals, if that's involved, that's borne by the general property tax of the village. Each year, the village allocates a specific amount of money, and right now it's about $650,000 a year. And with that money, we go by and we resurface or recondition or replace roads, depending on what it is, across the entire village. Now, we don't do the whole village with that small amount of money, but the village's commitment is once we've accepted an improvement that's been built to our standards, then we will maintain that road in perpetuity, and we won't go back with that future maintenance cost to go back and assess the people for what they initially paid for when they bought the property or the predecessors in that property that had paid for. So once somebody has a road, they have a road, and they might they shouldn't be anticipating that they're going to get a special assessment to pay for future maintenance or any work that's done to that road. In the case of the subdivision, in my experience, in my time here, we've had two, and this would be the second one since 1990, where the real estate market had gotten the best of a developer, and they were unable to complete their improvements. The first one was in the Meadowdale subdivision, which is right down the road here off of 39th. And in that area, there was lots have been divided. The plat had been created. The underground improvements had been put in. And there was, I believe, there was four houses out of, I think it was approximately 25 lots that had actually been sold and homes had been built. There, they didn't have their first year improvements, which is the binder course of asphalt and the curb and gutter. So for about 3 years, they were driving on gravel to get to their homes. In that area, it was apparent the subdivider had folded up. The bank wasn't making any effort to make payments. The banks were in transition. One bank had been shut down by the FDIC, and the second bank was taking over. In order to remedy that situation, the village evaluated where the roads were at that point. And in that subdivision, we determined that given the fact that there were so few homes built yet, and our ordinances typically require 75% of the homes be built before the final course of asphalt's in, the village decided that the best case way to proceed in that subdivision was to put in a concrete road and curb and gutter and assess the cost of the concrete in order to, withhold with our ordinance that says the village taxpayers won't pay for improvements, but it ensured that the road would get built, and as the houses were built into that subdivision over time, they wouldn't damage the road. Meadowdales is an area where the houses are very large. I mean, they're extremely large houses, and when a new subdivision is being built out, anybody that's lived in a new subdivision or watched it, you have cement trucks, you have trucks hauling in blocks for foundation, you have sand and gravel trucks, you have trucks hauling in trusses, the drywall. It's a lot of heavy loads, and it's typically more than what a street is designed to handle, which is why, in the case of the Whispering Knoll subdivision, we allow the developer to put in the base course of asphalt, which we know will degrade and break down at some point, and you really can't say where. They put in as much gravel as they're going to need for finish, but only about 2.5 inches or 2 inches of the base course goes in, and the curbs are put in to just establish a boundary for the home, for the people in their property where they build to, and we modify the curb inlets so that water can drain into the storm sewer. It's not an ideal situation, but it's one way that the village had done previously to keep the development costs manageable for a developer, for the people who are going to buy those homes eventually, and allow the construction to beat up the road. And then when the final course of asphalt is put in, all the areas that have failed, we go back and repair those areas, any underground improvements that have failed subsequently, because that will happen during that period too, whether it's storm or sewer or water laterals, water mains, sewer mains, whatever the problem is, those are all repaired and fixed, because once we put that final course of asphalt down, we don't want to patch it again. We don't want to be in there digging it up. I mean, something can happen where a water main will burst or a valve will break, and that just happens, but typically not with new infrastructure. But we want the people there to be able to, at least for 20 to 25 years, have a nice, clean, rideable road. And then the village taxpayers, as we go forward and go to maintain that road, we're maintaining something that's more sustainable than something that was just slapped together. We had ongoing discussions with Mr. Barcelona, the developer of the subdivision, about the need to do two things. One is that the letter of credit from the date of 2005, we felt was not sufficient to complete the project as it needed to be completed. And as time goes on, this project gets more and more expensive. The improvement here is primarily a petroleum-based improvement. As the price of oil goes up, the price of asphalt goes up, the price of what it takes to get asphalt trucks in here to deliver the materials, it's incrementally increasing, and it's a problem that Pleasant Prairie faces. It's a problem that the state of Wisconsin faces. Everyone's dealing with increasing road construction and maintenance costs, and we could see that we're coming to a point of no return on this, where one, the base was degrading significantly, and we could have a situation which we've had in some subdivisions where they had to rip out the entire road, put in a brand new base course, and put in the final topping. This one has not gotten to that point yet, but we've got some significant failures in it. We'd had a series of correspondence and meetings with the developer who had indicated he felt the project could be done for a bid price that was older. Our review of the quantities, we didn't feel that the village could be guaranteed or the people that lived out there could get the product that they had planned on securing when they bought their lots. But nonetheless, we gave them the opportunity to go ahead and, if they had a bid price on it and a contract, to go ahead and do it last year, and that didn't come to fruition. I have to say that our discussions with Mr. Barcelona, the developer, were, from my perspective, from the staff perspective, were less than straightforward. And as we look back, I think he was stretching the project out, the process out, in hopes of doing two things. One is hoping the bank would accommodate his demands, and secondly, being able to sell more lots. We'd adopted that initial resolution last year, and it was, I think, the developer's hope that we'd be in a situation where his costs for improvements would be spread across the remaining property owners, and he wouldn't have to pay for it. There'd be one less thing that he wouldn't have to deal with as he disposed of or ended his agreement with the bank. the bank was looking to minimize their exposure at this as well. We came to September, October of last year, and typically you can't, for an asphalt road, if you were going to pave right at the beginning of October, you'd be okay. But a subdivision like this, where you have to come back and regrade the roads, dig out the bad spots, you know, we had some underground improvements that needed to be repaired. There was a substantial amount of work that needed to take place and get that squared away before asphalting could take place. So we wanted them to get started early, because if you start that work in October, by the time you get done with it, and some of the stuff you don't know what you're going to be dealing with until you dig it up and expose it, you could be paving in November. And if it's cold, if it's wet, you're not going to get a good product, and then we'll be sitting in the worst-case scenario where you've got patches and open gravel in places, and we don't want that to happen. So I filed a formal breach of the development agreement with Mr. Barcelona at the beginning of this year. We worked to give him the opportunity to plan to get this work to take place, and it didn't. Simultaneously, the real estate market began to pick up somewhat. I mean, it's not what it was. I don't know that it'll ever be like it was before, but there was movement of lots in this subdivision. And from the village's standpoint, to allow the developer to proceed to sell lots, knowing that he doesn't have sufficient funds to complete the project, and then have another person occupy a parcel, build a house on it, without knowing that he doesn't have the funds to complete it, wasn't acceptable. We had moved in our breach notice to secure $277,000 that was still in the letter of credit with the bank. So the village took possession of that money, so we would have some certain funds to be able to carry on these improvements with. At that point, as we moved on, it became more than obvious that they were starting to sell lots at a greater clip. It was that time we contacted council and to find a way to bring some kind of closure or stop on this, so that we could stop the sale of lots. And you know, since we had no guarantee that the proceeds from those sales would come back into the developer's hands and be able to provide a fund sufficient to meet the developer's requirements rather than have that fall back on existing property owners. So with that, and I'll introduce Village Council Tom Camilli, he then took steps to, on the village's behalf, to freeze those lots and put us in a position, the best position we could get in, to stop the developer from escaping from this project. So Tom, if you want to describe what you did, and if there's a gap that I had, feel free to jump in there too.
Thank you, Mr. Polakoff. Mr. President, members of the board, for the record, my name is Thomas Camilli, Jr. I'm an attorney with the firm of Gooden, Garrity, Puntillo, Camilli in Kenosha, 6301 Green Bay Road. As Administrator Polakoff indicated, my firm was engaged earlier this year as counsel on behalf of the Village of Pleasant Prairie with regard to this particular matter. Particularly, my village was asked to take certain action against Whispering Knoll LLC and its developer, John Barcelona, with regard to the fact that the remaining letter of credit funds on deposit were insufficient to allow the full and complete construction of the public improvements. My office, in conjunction with village officials, sent out numerous notices and numerous demand letters to Mr. Barcelona. And again, Whispering Knoll LLC is, of course, the developer of the Whispering Knoll subdivision and is currently the owner of the 13 unsold lots remaining at the subdivision. The village engaged my firm to take whatever action it could under the law to try and secure the necessary funds needed to complete the public improvements. Ultimately, Whispering Knoll LLC, as the developer of the subdivision, is responsible for the cost of the infrastructure, for the installation of the roads, and for all of the public improvements. Now, the problem was, as indicated, time went on, and Whispering Knoll and Mr. Barcelona were not putting up the necessary funds or additional funds that were determined necessary to complete all of these public improvements. So my firm sent out numerous letters, demand letters, to Mr. Barcelona requesting either additional cash or an additional letter of credit to give security to the village that the funds would be available to complete the public improvements. Unfortunately, despite numerous requests on behalf of my office and also on behalf of the village, there was no response. We subsequently became aware that there were efforts by Whispering Knoll to quickly sell the remaining 13 lots without any guarantee of any of those proceeds being paid to the village to complete the public improvements. At that point, my firm filed a summons and complaint on April 5th, 2013, in the Kenosha County Circuit Court, alleging breach of the development agreement between the Village of Pleasant Prairie and Whispering Knoll LLC. And in that lawsuit filed in Circuit Court, the village alleged that Whispering Knoll breached the agreement by failing to provide additional cash or an additional letter of credit in favor of the village to complete the remaining public improvements. In addition to filing the complaint in Circuit Court, we also filed a motion requesting what's known as a prejudgment writ of attachment. A prejudgment writ of attachment is a rather rare provisional remedy that allows a plaintiff to obtain a judgment upon certain property of Whispering Knoll prior to the time of judgment. And the village was successful in obtaining a prejudgment writ of attachment from the court, which resulted in liens being placed on the 13 unsold lots in the amount of the village's demand. And the village's demand was in excess of $146,000, which was approximately the amount determined necessary to complete the public improvements. The court issued a writ of attachment on April 12, 2013, and the Village of Pleasant Prairie then obtained liens upon those 13 lots. Additionally, the village continued its action against Whispering Knoll and moved for a default money judgment. Whispering Knoll never appeared in the action, and a judgment was entered against Whispering Knoll by the Kenosha County Circuit Court on May 16th of this year, and a judgment was entered in favor of the village and against Whispering Knoll in excess of $146,000. And the village's judgment lien remains upon those 13 lots. It was our hope and the village's desire to obtain the necessary funds to complete the public improvements from these remaining lots, or from the sales of these lots, which are owned by Whispering Knoll. Naturally, I don't think the village takes this measure very lightly, to have to consider special assessing all of the residents of Whispering Knoll, and I can say that the village has taken every legal action it could to try and avoid this result. And in fact, some of the action that was taken in court was very unusual and in some respects very uncommon to try and exercise the village's rights to the greatest degree permissible by law and to protect the taxpayers, and that has been done. We have a judgment against Whispering Knoll, and we have judgment liens upon all of those lots. Unfortunately, as the board may know, a judgment does not necessarily equate to immediate payment by Whispering Knoll. So even though Whispering Knoll is obligated per court judgment to pay those additional amounts to the village, it has not done so. What has also happened is, in the interim, the bank, which holds the mortgage upon those 13 lots, has begun foreclosure proceedings to recover those lots. Old Plank Trail Community Bank, which is the holder of the mortgage upon those properties, has commenced with foreclosure, and a judgment of foreclosure was previously entered in favor of the bank. Practically, what that means is that when Old Plank Trail Community Bank completes its foreclosure upon those lots, it will recover title to those 13 lots and the judgment lien and the lien of attachment that the village had will be extinguished simply by operation of Wisconsin law. Because the mortgage of the bank is superior and prior to the lien of the village, by law, the village's lien gets extinguished, and that's pursuant to state law. We have also appeared in that foreclosure action. We have filed what's called a demand for surplus, which means that in the event that any surplus funds remain after these 13 lots are sold at sheriff's sale, the village has a right to collect upon those proceeds as a subordinate lien holder. However, at this point, the village, in my estimation, has done what it can to advance the rights of the village, to hold Whispering Knoll responsible for what is a breach of the agreement, and to attempt to collect the necessary funds from Whispering Knoll. And unfortunately, that simply has not happened, and the village is in a position now where it needs to go forward to complete those public improvements, and it needs the necessary funds to do so. So while we have done and continue to do what can be done from a legal perspective, the funds still need to be acquired by the village to complete those improvements. So that's where we are litigation-wise at this point. I'm certainly happy to respond to any questions of the board or any other comments that may be entered later.
I think, thanks, Tom. That's a very good description where we were. The other thing that occurred while we, Tom had filed the, gotten the liens placed on the lots, or we were in the process, the bank filed an injunction to stop us from being able to do it. And
that's an excellent point, and I think it goes, I think it further shows the efforts that the village has done to try and advance its interests. During the course of our litigation against Whispering Knoll, the bank attempted to intervene in our lawsuit against Whispering Knoll. An Old Plank Trail Community Bank and its lawyers filed certain documents with the court requesting the court to, in essence, quash the liens that the village obtained on these lots. And the village was successful in defeating that motion. The judge determined that Old Plank Trail Community Bank had no right to request the quashing of the village's liens, and we were successful. Unfortunately, what has happened, and as is the right of the bank to do, it's simply foreclosing its mortgages at this point. And what's going to happen at the end is it's going to be able to extinguish the village's liens through that foreclosure process.
I think that, you know, as Tom advised us, that there was a chance that was going to occur. I mean, our action wouldn't be able to stop them from foreclosing on it. But it was, I think it was telling, you know, in the discussion in court, you know, the attorneys for Old Plank Town Bank indicated that they knew that there was expenses out there. They knew that the village, you know, wasn't whole, neither were the homeowners. But they had indicated in open court that they felt that was something that the village taxpayers should pay for rather than themselves. The judge didn't agree with that, and I think it helped him formulate his opinion, you know, and he agreed with Attorney Camilli's findings. But that's kind of where we're at, is that, you know, the bank, other than that one attempt they made to quash our legal efforts, is to minimize their exposure, and anything that can be put off to the village taxpayers is going to increase or decrease their loss. I mean, we don't know what the exact loss is or where they are with their foreclosure. So we're at the point where, you know, we need to, in order to get this thing built this year and have some certainty on the fixed costs, is to get this done. And Mike Spence is going to describe the project in detail. But before he starts that, there's just a couple of overall concepts that I'm recommending to the board that we follow in this process. You know, the hearing, of course, will be taking place tonight. And there's no question that there is some groundswell of legal challenges that the property owners might be undertaking. The village is still going to do everything we can to exercise our rights. But in a special assessment in the state of Wisconsin, it's for public improvement for benefiting properties. So we can only assess the people who will benefit from that improvement. In this case, there's two of them, really. There's the road completion and the repairs it takes to get so that road can be completed, and at that point we'll accept the road. And that assessment is being based on a per parcel basis. You know, that if your lot is 60 feet wide or your lot is a cul-de-sac that's 40 feet wide or it's a corner lot that's 200 feet wide, in essence, you got a road. Your best benefit to that road is you have access to your property. You know, no, we don't limit where people can park, where you can only park in front of your parcel. Everybody has access to the road. So the, for a street assessment, we're, that benefit is defined by on a unit basis. The second assessment is for trees. In that case, it's a unit cost. If you have five trees in front of your property, those will be your five trees. If you have one tree, you have one tree, and that's based on how many you have there. But at the end of the day, you know, we have hard numbers for the bid. We're bidding, we're performing this special assessment based with hard numbers on what a contractor has given us for what he thinks is going to be done. Now, there is contingency in there, and there's some allowable amounts based on, you know, when someone's, when the contractor's exposing failures, how much work they're going to do. Any assessment that the village levies, when it comes time to collect the money, the only thing that we collect is what we spent. So if we don't spend $378,000 and we spend $350,000, we're going to bill for $350,000. If there's, through any kind of settlement or negotiation, or the bank comes back and says to Pleasant Prairie, we feel really bad about what we're doing, what's happened here, we'll give you some lots to sell, and then you can use the proceeds of those lot sales to buttress the cost, then we would take those sale proceeds, put them against the assessment cost, and then the whatever that number is would be the new assessment number. If some developers were to purchase the lots, remaining lots, and develop them, and you know that we could leverage and negotiate some additional funds from that sale or transaction to be able to reduce the assessment, we'll do that. Problem is that some of those things, you know, construction will know what our savings are as the project evolves. If we have additional negotiation, or we haven't had any negotiations with the bank, they haven't negotiated with us at all, but you know, we're going to reach out and try and get that to happen. If they do, if we can secure some either a lot or some payment or whatever, then we'll apply that to the special assessment. If some other developer wants to acquire those lots and they're able to put the bank in a position where they have more money to be able to deal with this and that money is made available to the village, we'll apply that to the special assessment. So we know that tonight that the final number, which is 378 and change, is the top. If for some reason we had to do more, we had to spend more, we would send everybody a notice and reopen a public hearing and say, for whatever reasons, we couldn't get it done and we need more money. In my 28 plus years here, I think we've had to do that twice. And it was a project that had a lot more uncertainty than this does. This has some uncertainty, but it's, you know, as a public works and project, it doesn't have a lot of uncertainty. It just has a little bit. So in Mike's estimates, as verified by the hard bids that were on there, we've got a pretty good handle on what it's going to take to get this thing done. So we're anticipating we're going to come in under budget. You know, that is, are we going to be off by 100,000? No, because his numbers are generally right. We're going to, you know, if we can remove some of the uncertainty as far as underground work, if we have a really good contractor, Payne & Dolan is, you know, the road builder in the state. They know how to build roads. We're not going to be out there fighting with them about how they have to do it. So our inspection time should be minimal. I mean, things are going to line up that are going to help with the cost on this project. It's not going to take away everybody's assessment. But in order to allow some time for this thing to get done and then make available any opportunity we can to bring more money into the project, the final resolution that the board will be considering, resolution 1315, for the final determination of assessments, I'm recommending that the effective date be left open until October 1st of 2014. And what that'll mean is that by that time, that gives us the better part of a year to allow some of these actions to kind of work their way through the system, see what we have. You know, if we don't get anything with respect to more money, everybody will know it, and they'll be able to plan ahead for that expense. In October, we would be asking the people who have this assessment, if in the worst case scenario the assessment is the $37.47 per lot for the paving, they want to pay that all off with no interest. Come October 1st of next year, they could do that, or they could pay it off over a 10-year period, starting with the first payment in 2015, and it would be 10% of the principal, and the interest rate would be what the interest rate is now. You know, there's some legislation that was passed this year that modifies that, so we'll be taking a look at what bonds are at that point in time, and that'll be the interest rate. You know, bonds today are between 3.5% and 4%. You know, I have no idea what it'll be at that point, but you know, they're probably less than 9%, which is what we were charging. So that's how this, you know, we wanted to be able to provide some room for both the village and the residents there to examine their options while we get this thing built and get our cost fixed on this project. So we know what we got to do, and then the village assume the maintenance of this subdivision roads and improvements, you know, this fall. Get that behind us, because as we wait, this gets more and more expensive as time goes on for the cost of the materials and for the degradation of the base course of asphalt there. The subdivision is almost virtually at the 75%. It's close to the 75% fill rate, so we, you know, I think we can withstand the rest of the improvement that's going to take place on that road. Because I think there will be some other things evolving out of here, and it just gives everybody more time to work their options. If they want to sue us, it gives them time to sue us. The provisions of the special assessment is you have 90 days from the date that the resolution becomes effective to bring an action in circuit court to overturn the special assessment, or it's really not overturning it. You could have the court determine whether or not the basis that we made this determination of special assessment and how those assessments were levied could be reviewed, and the assessment method might be modified, but not the fact that the assessment took place. So that would be their final option if they really felt that the village had erred on this and that the taxpayers should pay for it. So that's kind of the long view of where we go, and I think that it gives us some time to do that, because there are some things that are legally not completed but hanging. And I think my counsel to the board, or my advice, is to stop the special assessment and not award a contract for getting this done is just going to increase the price of the project. And if we end up in the same place a year from now where the village still has to get this thing paid for and we end up with a special assessment, it's just going to be more. We think this project, I think this project's probably growing by $40,000 in a year. And that's just, not that we're doing, we are doing a little bit more, probably more rehabilitation work to concrete, but it's just, you know, the price of asphalt is going up. So before we open up the public hearing, and at the public hearing, anything we've talked about, you know, if people want to come up to comment or ask questions, we'll be available. Before we do that, I'd like our village engineer to go through the special assessment, the scope of the project, and what's involved in it, and how he had arrived at the determination of how the assessments are going to be levied and distributed as far as the proportion of them.
Thank you, Mr. Polakoff. I have a number of slides here. Some of the slides have the issues have been discussed, and I'll go over them briefly. But what I plan on doing is giving a little additional background on how our infrastructure projects in the village proceed, and then also an indication of what work needs to be done and what we've done to assess the costs. The village, as was indicated previously, entered into an agreement with the developer back on March 22, 2005. Generally in the village, for a subdivision, the public improvements are to be constructed in three phases, and that's to allow for settlement and as a result of construction traffic, so that because the roads do take a beating during construction. The first phase of the project included the grading of the subdivision, the sanitary sewer system, the water supply and distribution system, and that initial paving, which was a gravel base course, and then also streetlight and street signs. These improvements were completed in 2005 and were paid for by the developer. The second phase of improvements includes then installing the curb and gutter. As I indicated, the first phase is just gravel. Some landscaping, and then some grading compaction of the base course, and then the installation of the binder course of asphalt, which is what you have out there now. And then at this point, some street trees were installed at homes that or at lots that had homes built, but all the street trees weren't put in because generally that becomes an issue with driveways and potential damage during construction of homes. These improvements were completed in 2007 and were paid for by the developer. The phase three improvements is where we're at now, which includes raising the storm inlet frames. That's where the stormwater goes. They need to be raised to the final grade of the final pavement. As Mr. Polakoff indicated, we need to replace the binder and the pavement areas that have failed over the years. I think you probably have seen the markings out there, and we did a thorough job of indicating where the pavement was deteriorated, excuse me, and what needed to be replaced. And then the last part is to install the remaining street trees. As indicated, the money in the letter of credit was not sufficient. Again, this is just some of the actions that we took back in June, September, and November of last year. And again, in this year, we were notified that the funds were insufficient. Or what's it? Yeah, we notified the bank and the developer that the funds were insufficient. This is just an example of some of the documentation. We sent a breach letter back in July to John Barcelona, Whispering Knoll LLC. And again, at that time, we indicated that there were insufficient funds. And as you can see toward the bottom, we said to provide a supplementary letter of credit, which, again, wasn't done. Then back in November, we also, where they were looking at maybe trying to finish it, we, as again was indicated, we were getting late in the year. This letter is dated November 2nd. We were getting into the end of the paving season. And again, we wanted the owner to acknowledge and supplement the letter of credit, which, again, he did not. And then, again, as Attorney Camilli indicated, we did take some legal action, and the bank has now commenced a foreclosure to thwart our actions. However, at this point, as indicated, there's still liens on the property. But a bankruptcy would remove those liens, and this is why we're, as you can see, where we're at today. in terms of getting into the details of what the assessment is all about, this is the actual special assessment map of the subdivision. As you can see, all the lots are indicated there. The gray area is the final paving of the roadway that will be completed as part of this project. The dots indicate the trees that need to be planted also. And then finally, there is a sidewalk that's to be installed to the north there to go from the subdivision to the school right there. The improvements in more detail include the storm sewer and sanitary sewer utility repairs, again, to make sure that all this infrastructure is to the quality and to the level that's acceptable to the village. We televised all the infrastructure there. So there were some issues in the storm sewer and the sanitary sewer that were identified, and these are all going to be fixed as part of this project. I mentioned the sidewalk, the final layer of asphalt, and the street trees. The assessment rate calculation is based on an actual bid cost. The paving and the repairs that I just referred to were all part of a bid document that was submitted for bids, and we received them on June 20th of this year. The total rate also includes a conservative tree installation cost, engineering and inspection services, as well as a contingency. It's always, as was indicated earlier, it's our intent to have a conservative estimate that if anything, it will go down. We don't want to have to come back and say that we still don't have enough money. We took all these costs, and I'll show you in a minute. We reduced those by the money that we do still have cash on deposit from the developer. Then the final assessment will be based on the actual cost and not to exceed the approved assessment rate. I put an asterisk there because since the time that we sent out the notice of the assessment, we have gotten in the estimate for the trees, and that was bid actually last week, and the low bid came in under the estimate, which is $18,635. You'll see how that affects the numbers shortly. as far as the rate calculation, and this was mentioned earlier, it is our belief that all the lot owners equally benefit from having access to the public road. Therefore, we believe that the most equitable way of distributing these costs are on an equal share basis, and therefore the rate basis is based on a per lot basis within the development. For the street trees, we believe there's an individual benefit for each homeowner to have the trees on their property. In this particular case, there's 54 trees that remain. The cost that was in the estimate that we sent out was $19,373. As you can see, the estimate that came in from the contractor is less. So the assessment rate for the trees is going to be based on a per tree basis for each lot. As far as how the numbers work out for the assessment, for the final paving, the $379,000 and change, again, that's an actual bid number from Payne and Dolan. The engineering services number includes the staff time for inspection. It also includes construction services to have an inspector out there, again, to make sure that the contractor is performing the work properly. So that total
includes surveying and staking.
I'm sorry. That includes surveying and staking to get the grades for the road as well. That total ends up to be $412,000. We did add a 5% contingency. So that's to cover any unforeseen items that might arise during the construction of these improvements. Then there is a small eyebrow part of the road there that is related to the Sunny Prairie development. So that money is going to come from that developer. Then we subtracted out as well, the cash on deposit. That's the money that we have from the developer of $277,000 and change, and less the interest that we've accrued on that money. So the final assessable cost is $149,916.80. We divided that by 40 lots, and that is the assessment rate of $3,747.92 per lot. For the street trees, again, the original estimate was $19,373. Again, we have engineering. We have to do the inspection, and there's a number of things and staking out where the trees go. That's included in that cost. And then we did put in a 5% contingency. So that total number becomes $23,491.08. Divided by the number of trees, that comes out to $435.02 per street tree. Now, the asterisk indicates, again, the low bid came in under the estimate, so it's actually $18,635. So if you carry those numbers through, the assessment for the tree would go down to $420.68. And again, it's important to note, as been mentioned, the assessment won't be more than what we've given you. Again, we've tried to be conservative and include contingencies. And as Mr. Polakoff indicated, you know, we're looking at, you know, other areas to hopefully reduce this. But it's just important to know it's the actual costs that will be assessed. So we will be monitoring the construction and the engineering costs to make sure that they are less than the assessed amount. Okay, that's all I have.
With that, Mr. President, I'd recommend that we open up the hearing.
With that, we will open up the hearing. We'll open up the comment or question. We ask that you give us your name and address for the record and use the microphone. Jane, was there a sign-up sheet?
There was a sign-up sheet, and following the meeting rules, as there are more than five speakers tonight for the public hearing, there's a time limit of 3 minutes, unless the board agrees to extend that time. So the first speaker is Joan Borkovic.
John Borkbeck, 10837 45th Avenue, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Mr. President and members of the board and other supporting members, thank you for the work you've done for us on our behalf. We realize this is quite a complicated thing. I'm standing here as somewhat of a representative for our group, all by default, because I met with Mr. Polakoff. Thank you again for your recap today. It lent clarity to me on some pieces that I was missing. I think we came into talking to you due to the fact that we felt that amount of time that we had to even absorb what was going on was shockingly short, and per our meeting together, hoping to get some kind of a time delay to this, and appreciate your recommendation on the effective date of the assessment being moved back. At least that would give us some time to examine our options. I think on behalf of some of the other folks that are here, and I'm sure a couple others will be speaking, but effectively for the existing homeowners, we feel that we're kind of like that farmer who paid for his improvements and he's getting hit up again, and feel that we've paid this money in already. Why is it that we have to pay more when these delays weren't necessarily related to us? On a personal basis, I question whether or not perhaps there was some level of greed, I guess is the word to use, on trying to delay things because they didn't get the dollars that they wanted to. They maybe could well have hit the 75%. to satisfy their need to getting a completion in place at that time. Secondly, we as homeowners, we negotiated our purchases with the assumption that all these roads are going to be completed as per the agreement with the developer. There's some other points to make regarding some of the way the allocations are created, and I understand the benefit to all concept and equally spread across to the point of having already paid in. Furthermore, we look at some of these points as a matter of fact, that Sunny Prairie area, that they're able to have a $4,300 assessment for two different lots, which will be using our subdivision to gain access to their lots. They're getting, they're being assessed $4,300 total. Why would this not be a 42 lot issue? They already paid in, right? Well, so did we, and I think that's the position of our group as well. The other point that I wanted to bring to the table was regarding the letter of credit and the whole concept, and I don't have clarity on this, so forgive me if I don't say it quite right, but the point of the letter of credit not being adequate, if the developer came to the village and said, we can get it done, is it not the village's right to say, well, we hold the inspection card and either we either approve your work or we don't? So in that light, why is it that the village is able to say, we don't believe you that you can get it done for this amount of money for the letter of credit? So I think that's one of those looming questions that we have. Besides that, thank you again for the work you've done, and really more than anything, I think that the help is with the offer to delay the effective date of the assessment to 2014 would be most helpful. And we want to do everything we can to help you folks gain what's right from the developer and for all these things that have happened to all of us. And I guess we're here together as a team. So thank you.
Thank you.
Keith Rochelle.
Yeah, thank you for taking the opportunity, helping us out, and for what we've done.
Name and address for the record, please.
Keith Rochelle, 1731 44th Avenue.
Thank you.
I hesitate to speak sometimes because I have a hard time expressing myself and my feelings and what I'm properly doing. Differently, but I gather that from talking to other people, that some people at the village may not believe that we are concerned about this. That's not the case. We're all very concerned about it. Some of us are in survival mode. We bought the properties 8 years ago. Now all of a sudden, properties have gone into half the value. In that process of 8 years now, some of us have taken significant pay cuts. So we're in survival mode. We're wondering how this assessment is going to affect us in the future, how we're going to pay for it. Some of us don't have the opportunity to take off and make calls to the village and come to the village and look at documentation. So, again, we're in the survival mode. So I just want to make certain that everybody is aware that this is the case, that we are all concerned about this, and how this is going to be based, and that we all agree it has to get done, but we do agree that we are all concerned. That's all.
Thank you.
Amy Lowry.
Mic's not picking up.
Yeah,
Amy Lowry. I'm at 4405 107th Place. We've done a lot of talking tonight about the paving of the lands, but I'd like to talk a little bit about the trees. We are the most recent house to build out in West Spring Knoll. We just finished our construction in April. Back in July of last year, we actually, when we were negotiating our purchase of the land, were asked by West Spring Knoll to install the trees on our own. So as part of the negotiation process, we called the village and said, okay, you know, they're wanting us to do this. What's it going to cost us? How many trees? You know, the varieties. We want to know, you know, what's a good negotiating factor here. At the time, we were informed that the duty fell on the developer and that we could not include it in the contract. As a result, we ended up paying more for the land. So we're feeling, I guess, particularly misled in that where we were told that we could not use this as a negotiating factor, we're now having to pay anyway. In the interim, we had waited to reach out to the developer asking when the trees were going to be installed. We just recently had our driveway put in towards the end of June, and so in the interim received this notice of special assessment. And so we reached out to the developer anyway, and were told that he could not speak to us because that was what the bank directed. And so we feel a little bit that our ability to move forward was hindered by the village's actions in the lawsuit and in administering the special assessment. And so we are not given the opportunity we otherwise would have to work this out and negotiate with the developer to try to get those in anyway. It's $2,600, so it is, you know, substantial. We're on a corner lot, so we have six trees. We do feel we're in a little bit of a different position than maybe some of the other homeowners who have trees yet to be installed. I do have our contract here that explicitly says seller shall install all required parkway trees. I also have, you know, documentation of the discussion with the village, and that we were told we couldn't use it as a negotiating factor. So at this point, we still, you know, feel there's some questions unanswered on, you know, how we're going to work out in this situation when we're between a lawsuit with the village and a developer who maybe or maybe not would have followed through with the contract that we signed with him. I've since spoken with Mr. Spence on Friday, and he was very sympathetic and offered, you know, his condolences in helping us through and his assistance, and it was much appreciated. So thank you for your time on Friday. Today I spoke with Ms. Kuzma at the bank and was simply informed that the village had a letter of credit which was intended to cover the trees, and they could do nothing further to assist us. So I don't have a lot to say besides that, other than I'd like you to take that into consideration when we felt we were protected because we had negotiated specifically in the contract based upon, you know, discussions that were had, and we are now left paying for it anyway after paying additional for the lot. So thank you very much for your time.
Kenneth Wilson.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Kenneth Wilson. My address is 4470 107th Place. John already expressed some of his concerns and some of the residents' concerns around the assessment process. He already raised the Sunny Prairie one, so I won't address that. But one of the things I think the residents feel very strongly about is those residents who are already in the subdivision have already paid. I think that's been said already this evening. We would like to understand if it's possible to burden the open lots. And really the goal of burdening the open lots would be that it puts the emphasis back onto the bank, which I think is all of our goal, both the village and the residents. In that way, it wouldn't burden new residents coming in because those lots would be sold at market value. And if the bank could recover the assessment fee through selling of the lots at market value, then I think everybody would be happy with that. More than likely, however, the bank would have to absorb some of that assessment because of the market value today. So we would like you to consider when reviewing the assessment to burden the open lots rather than equally across all of the lots. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kim Wilson. Brad Santeler.
Hi, I'm Brad Santeler, 10798 45th Avenue. And most everything's been said, so I'll be brief, you know, not to belabor it. But I have two sort of areas of question. I guess one's a question and then one's a consideration. So the question part is, as this has unfolded over the period, in looking at some of the documents, it appears that there was a five-year stipulation and or 75% of the lots. So at some point it would be helpful to understand what happened with that five-year incident and why that wasn't appropriate in terms of them doing the paving. Hindsight being 2020, I guess, but we're not at 75% now. And so what could have been done potentially at the time, we find ourselves in the same position of not being completed lots. So that's sort of just an observation I'd like to understand. And then again, just to repeat, two things around the assessment. One is, if it is an equitable assessment, the question is Sun Prairie getting its equitable share too? I would like to understand the dynamics there. And then second, as both now John and Kenny have suggested, if there was a way to put the burden of the assessment on those unsold lots, it seems like it would replicate the spirit of the lien, which was on those lots as opposed to burdening the current taxpayers. Thank you.
Edwin Martell.
Edwin Martell, 4416 109th Street, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. As I listened to my neighbors, I was writing my question. And I guess my take on it is, and once again, it goes back to the empty lots. Why couldn't we, since we already paid, those of us who already lived there, we already paid into this road improvement as part of the original price of the home. So by paying again, we're paying twice. So why couldn't we apply the same concept to the empty lots? So in other words, if you have, since we already paid, okay, we paid again, so that's twice. So then for the empty lots, use the same concept. Just take a number and multiply it by two. Just, once again, just a suggestion. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Chris Passe. Jeff Rodriguez. Or Christina Rodriguez.
That's the names on the sheet. Anyone else wishing to speak on this item? Yes, ma'am. Microphone, name and address.
Gail Reinhart, 10731 44th Avenue. I want to know what you're going to do in the future to prevent this from happening. I understand this is something that's happening all over the country due to the real estate crash. I've noticed that, and I've read articles where a lot of the Western states now have instituted, when a new development goes in, they will take part at the closing, a sum that will be put into a escrow account to be used for the if the development is not finished properly. And I want to know if you're going to institute something like that, or are you considering something, because this is very, very costly. We have had three foreclosures in our subdivision already, and we don't know how many more may happen because people can't make their bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Kathy Borkovec, 10837 45th Avenue, Pleasant Prairie. So thank you again for all of your time this evening. I just wanted to review and thank you for your thought that was mentioned in the Kenosha paper. And that was of the three lots, a potential for three lots to be to pay for this assessment. So again, not to expand on that, but please consider that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Milagros Vitor Butson, 2825 11th Place, Unit 706. We're currently building on Lot 1 in Whispering Knoll. I guess my question is, if we were to divide this, if we were to do the special assessment for $3,747.92 and the lots remain unsold for the 13 lots that are outstanding, would we have to make up that loss, which is about $48,000?
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone else? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing and open up the board comment or question. Mike, would you?
Yeah, there are some good questions out there tonight, and I'll answer all of them if I can. Mr. Borkovic and someone else brought up the question about the Sunny Prairie assessment. If you think back to Mike's presentation, I believe it was $4,339 is what Sunny Prairie on the assessment schedule, that's listed as their contribution. They had given that money to the village prior to knowing where we were going to be with this project. That was money from their development agreement that they completed. So once they had their work done and they had that remaining funds left on letter of credit, they provided that to the village for completion of these improvements that we're talking about. So at that time, you know, not unlike you, they didn't know that it was going to cost more. So what the village is doing with Sunny Prairie is we already have $4,300 of their funds. And if you look, you all know where it is. It's between lots 36 and lots 34. They'll have a special assessment to make up the difference between it's roughly $1,900 between the $4,339 they have and what the $3,747 is. So they'll have to pick up that. That'll be a separate special assessment hearing that they'll have. So they will have to pay. That will reduce, you know, the total number by $1,900, $1,937, I believe it is. So that'll be paid. One of the questions that wasn't asked, but it relates, and you know, is on 43rd Avenue. The people that live on the east side of 43rd Avenue weren't assessed, and they weren't assessed. Kind of, if you think back to what I was saying, is once you get a road, you have a road, and you're using that road, we don't come back and assess you for putting another one in. And back when Whispering Knolls was constructed, the lay of the land looked a lot different than it does today. There was a significant amount of grading that had to take place in order to get that. You know, as you think back, if you're to stand on 43rd Avenue and you look west, Whispering Knolls climbs in elevation. And what we needed to do, or what the developer needed to do in order to get the grades to work there and get drainages, they had to completely change the grades along 43rd Avenue, both on both sides of the street. So the people on the east side of the street, we basically used up almost all their right-of-way that they have. So they lost sections of lawn and terrace because the road that was there before was off-centered some and it was a lot smaller. So they don't get billed. I mean, the fact that the developer needed something to make his development work was an improvement the developer had to make because it didn't benefit them at all because they already had a road. What they were doing is making an improvement on their property so he could get drainage to come away from the property onto the street and into the storm sewer. So that can't be assessed either. The other question is, I believe that John brought up was, could they have done the work under the letter of credit earlier? And this is, we did go back and forth on this, and you know, the village builds a lot of roads every year, and we've been doing it for quite a while. And you know, what we want to be able to do is make sure that once that road construction takes place, and they're in the middle of it, if they don't have enough money, that's almost the worst case scenario, because then you have the road demolished in sections, you have manholes that might not be set, the catch basin inlets that receive the water might not be set. So to start that project out, you know, the developer said he could do it under his existing letter of credit. We didn't think it was possible to complete it just based on what the cost of materials were. And, you know, the developer or the contractor, if he has to do more work, then the money's there, he'll stop or something's going to happen. So at that point, it doesn't help anybody to get the project three-fourths done and not have it completed. Because the thing that won't get completed is the final lift of asphalt. So you could have the underground improvements made. You could have some of the catch basin squared away. But if you get to the point where you don't have enough money and you can't complete the project, then the last thing happens is the base course or the top course doesn't get in. You're right back where you started from. You know, we use sound engineering. You know, when we price out a project, we just don't say what we think it's going to do. We look at actual bids that are going on every day, and we review what other municipalities, what other people are paying for asphalt work, for grading, for storm sewers, all that stuff, because, you know, it's an evolving market. If there's a lot of work out there, the prices get a little higher, it gets competitive. If there's not a lot of work out there, then the prices will stabilize or sometimes come down. So it's not just we don't look at this in isolation. We look at what the current marketplace is for construction business to come up with our number of what it's going to take to do it. And that's the number we're using. If the developer's telling us a different number, you know, God bless him if he thinks he can do it, but at the end of the day, when you look at their contracts, they can't carry it on, then they have to come up with more money. If they're already telling us they can't enrich the letter of credit, we don't want them to start them down a project or down a road where they can't finish it. Because then we're all going to be back here trying to come up with money again, and we won't have much time to get it done. In respects to Keith's comments, you know, how will this assessment be paid? I mean, I think we pretty much described that, we're sensitive to the point that this is not the ideal economy for anybody. I mean, you know, even if you haven't been taking pay cuts or cuts, or you still have your job, $3,700 is $3,700 that you didn't plan on paying. We're somewhat limited by if the public is going to stand behind that improvement and accept it, you know, it's got to be paid for. The best thing we can do in this instance is to stretch out that time on the front end so that you know it's coming, and we exercise every tool we have to make sure we can bring whatever resources in to make you, the residents, and the village as whole as possible, so we're not having to pay the most of that. And the best thing I can do, the village can do, is use that extra year to effectuate what we can. We realize it's, you know, that, you know, it's a burden for anybody to have to pay this, especially when you've already paid for it. Right? Everybody here at the dais understands full well that you guys have already paid for this. I mean, it's not like it's you got a deal and you didn't pay for it. You did pay for it. That was the give in your lot. But we're prohibited from using your ability to pay as a basis for how we determine what the costs are. The state law says we really have to determine what you pay based on the benefit you receive, not how much you pay. It's not a social work project. It's a public works project, and it has to be a direct connection between what you receive as an improvement and what you have to pay. And those things should be equal for everybody, whether they can afford it or not, or whether they want it or not, or whether they thought they were going to get it. It has to be the reality of the numbers. Mrs. Lowry, for your trees, I can understand your frustration. All I can tell you is that when we, put a developer in a development agreement and we require that he makes those public improvements, we put that in an agreement that's recorded. We take the money from him in the letter of credit that he's got money set aside to pay for it, and record that document in the register of deeds so that any real estate company, any mortgage company, an attorney, anybody looks back at what the recorded obligations are for that developer and what he has to do to perform to be in compliance is there for everybody to know. What we don't let people do is cut deals in between and outside of that, because it's impossible to keep track of, because your agreement that you make with the developer isn't recorded with the village. We have no knowledge of it unless we decide to run down there for any reason and take a look at it. What we want to be able to tell everybody when they buy a lot is, you know, we've created this plat for you to be able to buy a lot, and in the creation of that plat, the developer is committed to pave the roads, put the sewer, the water, the storm sewer, the curb and gutter, the trees, everything in, and that's going to be done. And he's, you know, prepared plans and specifications that we've approved. They've set a letter of credit aside to be able to pay for it, and this is all in place. I'm distressed that the bank told you what they told you, that the letter of credit was in place, because they know full well the letter of credit isn't sufficient. You know, they've been dodging from that, they've been hiding it, and they've been doing it to the detriment of the village. They've been doing it to the detriment of people that purchase lot from the developer that they're standing behind. I can't say anything that's more despicable about that than what took place, and they owed it to you to give a better answer that said that, yeah, there was a letter of credit, but wasn't sufficient, and our developer made an agreement to do it, and he should be standing behind it, and if we need to put another $1,000 into the, or whatever the number is, and to make the deal good, they should have done it. I think that's only good business, and maybe I'm being unsympathetic for their need to achieve a profit or a goal, but on the other hand, if you're going to be in the real estate business and development business, I mean, your word must mean something, and it's got to, you know, thank you, be meaningful to get something done. And I, you know, I'm sorry that's happened. And we don't want to be the one to tell you can't do what you ought to do, but I think to be fair and honest with everybody, that's what we expect a developer to do when they sign up to do an agreement. We're not going to let somebody develop land unless they meet all those requirements. For Ken Wilson and Ed Martell and can't read my own writing, for someone else that said, why can't we assess the open lots? If we could assess the remaining lots that haven't been sold for this development, for the cost of the improvements, we'd have done that in a minute. And that's really what Tom Camilli was describing when we put the lien on the properties. We put a lien on those lots so they couldn't be sold until this thing got resolved. But on a special assessment, we're governed by, you know, law and case law that says everybody has to, you know, who benefits from the improvement, whether they're a good guy or a bad guy, whether, you know, where they're from or who they are, doesn't matter. The fact that they own property and they receive the benefit, they get assessed. The fact that, you know, the bank's going to pay 13 assessments on this is, you know, they're going to have to pay that there. You know, the majority of them are sold is going to go to you. And I can't change that. The board can't change that. That's, you know, I can guarantee if we redid this assessment and levied it just on the open lots, the bank's attorney would take us to task, and we'd be right back where we started from, where we'd have to hold another hearing because that would get tossed out in a minute. That we would like to be able to do that, but we can't do that. It's just not possible. For Gail's question, what are you doing to stop this from happening in the future? I had to mention, well, one of the things that really I think is the there was a point in time in development where developments were happening so quick, we actually had a hard time getting the improvements in fast enough. You know, development would be at 75%, and we would be struggling to get this, you know, the second year improvements in, let alone the final improvements. Well, I think the new norm is that's not going to happen. You know, in fact, it's probably going to be quite a while before we see a plat where someone wants to divide land and make improvements. What we are going to do is say we're coming up with engineering plans and requirements that require a developer, as I said, to put in all the improvements in the first year. And they're going to be a substantive quality and strength. We're going to go away from asphalt roads, and we're going to go to concrete roads. We're going to use asphalt to seal it and not be the primary use of it. And we already have really tough standards on sewer water and storm sewer. I think that's going to do more to do two things. One is if a development takes a long time to be developed and built out, the improvements are going to withstand the construction weight and traffic that occurs on that. And secondly, you know, that short period, you know, everybody's costs are going to be known really fast. I mean, that thing is going to be done, and the number's the number. I think for the village and for people who are going to buy lots in the future, that's the best thing they can do is instead of having this thing drag out over time because we're trying to protect an improvement that's not meant to take a lot of heavy equipment, we should put the improvement in the way it's meant to handle and be able to handle it. You know, this last year we paved a road and just put a surface coat on a road in Lakeview Corporate Park. The busiest road in Pleasant Prairie is 95th Street between H and Highway 31. It carries semis, tankers, tons of cars. It's the busiest road we have. We put it in 20 years ago and last year, and it's one of those roads that's 8 inches of concrete on 8 inches of stone with an inch and a half of asphalt on it to kind of seal the concrete so water doesn't get in there and damage it. When we took that inch and a half of asphalt off, we milled it off, we had two cracks in the road that needed repair. That's almost a mile of road. Outside that, that's all we had to do. That road was in perfect shape. So, I mean, it was just for us, it was seeing is believing that if we, you know, put the more expensive road in the first place, it'll last. It'll hold up. If it can hold up to, you know, concrete panels being delivered to buildings out there and what have you, it'll surely hold up in a residential subdivision. On the 5 years or 75% that Brad talked about, the thing that stops us from paving a road before it gets close to 75% is the fact that you'll end up rebuilding that whole road. Even now, with the damage that's been done on the road right now, you know, we're not rebuilding, we're not ripping out all the asphalt. And if we start earlier, where we do allow that to happen, it just damages the road even more significantly. I don't know, Mike, if you have a percentage of how much of the road we're going to be removing as far as the asphalt.
I don't have the exact percentage, but it was a pretty big amount. I don't have the exact number, but it's, if I had to estimate, I'd say 20-25% at least.
Okay. So if we were to do that earlier, that amount would be smaller. I mean, you know, there'd be less damage at that point, but the problem is you'd have your final course of asphalt on there and your road would be beat to hell. Because all those trucks would just make it look terrible. And you know, we had a subdivision that we approved back in it was originally platted in the 50s. It was actually built out in 90, and we allowed the developer to go in and pave, do its final paving early. It's a Green Tree Estate subdivision. It's over off of 39th Avenue, 125th. And you drive on that road today, and we need to rip that entire road out. It needs a complete redo. And that road was destroyed, and those were small houses in there. They were like 60-foot wide lots. That whole road was destroyed because, you know, there was a lot of houses left to be built when the final lift was asphalt was on. So it was all done. It looked good for a couple of years, and it slowly just deteriorated. It's all alligatored. It's, you know, it's hard to find a piece that's much bigger than 6 inches without cracks around it. And that's why we wait as long as we can before we put that lift on there. And in just 5 years, in reality, means nothing. It really depends on what kind of trucks and how often and when are they going over the road. It's the percentage of lots that are done that'll give you some comfort that you'll be able to withstand additional traffic on the road. So that being said, the other thing I was going to, you know, as far as what can we do in the future, one of the things we're looking to do that we do in Pleasant Prairie is we pre-qualify contractors. We won't let anybody bid on a project unless, you know, we know their experience, they've done the work similarly, they've got professionals on staff that know what they're doing, they've got the financial strength to complete a project from beginning to end, and, you know, they have financials that show that. And they're not in court regularly because their work is so bad that they're being sued for failure of the work. And we were looking at pre-qualifying developers. And this developer is a perfect case of somebody that should be pre-qualified. And I would still like to be able to do that, but in the last legislative session in Wisconsin, Wisconsin legislature prohibits municipalities from imposing any restrictions on realtors, any qualifying or regulations on realtors. And that's what developers are. In essence, they're realtors. So what we're working on as far as plans to be able to pre-qualify a developer to see if they had the financial strength and the experience to do that, you know, we're not able to do that anymore. That's been taken away from us. So I'm really at a loss to be able to figure out how we can separate a good developer from a bad developer, even if we know they're a bad developer. If they comply with all the laws, right now the state's saying you have to let them go. So that can't be regulated locally anymore. I hope I addressed all the comments. If you have any questions, I'll...
Mike.
Mike, you did a fantastic job explaining the whole process. I don't think we have the representative from the developer here or the bank, do we? I can certainly understand why. Mike Spence, the time of the project, how long is it going to take to get this done?
The construction of the it will be done by this fall.
Okay.
Depending on what happens tonight, we're prepared to award the contract to the paver, and I would envision the paving to start probably within a month.
Okay. You know, by us adopting this resolution tonight, it is certainly not going to stop Mike and Mr. Camilli and Mike Spence and our department heads from further trying to resolve and get more money put into this project. And what Mike suggested, that we the final determination be in 2014 with final payment in 2015, gives 2 years of hopeful successful negotiation with the bank and the developer to bring more money into this to reduce the assessed amount. I don't, Mike, what you said tonight disturbs me greatly, that special interest can go to our legislators in Madison and create laws that benefit them at the expense of the taxpayer. And that just upsets me to no end. The people, everyday people like all of us here, don't have enough money to give the legislators to get special interest legislation. And the big boys do. And they get the laws passed to benefit them. It's upsetting. It's very upsetting. So I'll let others talk.
All right. Thank you. First, I want to thank everybody for coming, making their voices heard. A lot of good points, excellent questions. The one that struck me the most was, Mr. Reichel, everybody's in survival mode. Absolutely. What happened to the economy, what has happened, not only affected the developer, but it's affecting you, affecting us. These are not the kind of decisions we want to make. They're not fun, they're hard, and as some of you say, they're not fair. Understand, but your hands are tied sometimes. There's nowhere else to go. But I have all the faith in the world that Mike and our attorneys will do everything they can to pursue other avenues of funds to lower the assessment. Thank you for your presentation, Mike, and thank you.
Steve.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. We are well aware of the situation. But many times it's hard to understand how the government works. Mike here and the staff are doing an excellent job in getting all the facts together, and they were presented here tonight. Unfortunately, Michael say, my service too, Madison is passing more and more statutes that doesn't benefit the residents. It works against the residents and the municipality's interest. And that's a typical example that we cannot control who can build here. They got a law in that. So our hands are tied. So what Mike presented here tonight is the best that can be presented to anybody in these circumstances. So, you know, not too much left to say about that. We don't like it, but we don't have any choice. That's all I can say. Thank you.
John.
Mike.
John, I would make a motion to adopt Resolution 1315 with the final determination in 2014 and final determination with payment in 2015.
Cycle.
A motion by Mike, a second by Steve. Is there any further discussion?
And one other thing. Thanks for your professionalism in approaching the board. It doesn't always work that way, believe me. Thank you.
Yes.
I just want to add, as they've said before, thank you for coming. As Mike said, this is only the second time we've dealt with this, and it's no prettier than the first time we dealt with it. And unfortunately, everybody's out there to make a buck for themselves, and they really don't care about you, I guess. But the village, we try and look out for you. We try and do whatever we can do, but we're limited. And unfortunately, when Madison makes laws that makes it even harder for us to protect you, to work with you, protect all the village residents, that gets very frustrating to us because we know somebody bought their favor. And I'll just say it. Somebody bought their favor so they could financially benefit. You know, over the years, the village has always been known as a hard nose with developers because of what we do and how we protect our residents. And over the years, little things have been put in place or to take away from us the powers we had to protect the residents, whether it's your cable TV or the situation you're in today. And it's frustrating. And I commend the board and the village staff for what they do, because unlike the politicians in other parts of the country, and I hate to use the word politicians, I enjoy working with a group of people that really looks out for their village, for the people that live here, to provide the services, provide the honest government you deserve. And as Mike said, we're going to do everything possible, legally possible, an attorney working with us, to minimize whatever impact there is, and hopefully there wouldn't be an impact if the developer and the bank would do the right thing here. There is resolution to this. We just need cooperation. So with that, we have a motion, a second,
and
further.
John, one other. The clerk just brought something to my attention. Is this a November 1st, 2014 determination, November 1st, 2015 final payment?
It'll be kind of be up to the decision of the property owner. They'll be able to make a decision in November 1st, prior to November 1st of 2014, how they want to pay for it. If they decide to finance it in 10 equal installments, that first installment would show up in 2015. So that would be their time for their first payment.
The date being November 1st?
No, it would be January 31st.
Okay.
So it would show up on your property tax bill as a separate line that says special assessment streets. And then when you pay your property taxes, that one-tenth payment would, and interest would show up on that line. So it would be in 15. The total payment, you could pay it off at any time. If you finance it over for 10 years and you decide after 1 year, I'm going to pay the thing off, you can pay it off with no interest penalty. Just pay it off at once.
Mike, a clarification on this. November 14 and January 1st of 15, is that should be?
January 31st.
So January 31st?
Of 15.
Of 15. Okay.
Isn't that right? That's when the first specials are due?
It's another clarification, too.
Pardon?
Another clarification. The resident got the right to go and get their own finance and pay for this.
A what?
The finance.
Oh, yeah. If
they can finance themselves and pay for it.
One thing we encourage people to look at, if in fact that this thing kind of lands down and people are going to pay for it, some people, when we've done assessments over the years for sewer and water, what have you, they've just done a home equity loan, and they've picked it up, home equity loan, and paid us off. Since that typically is, you can deduct that off your taxes, or you can, do it that way, or, you can pay it off with us. Under the new rules, the interest will be about the same, typically, for what you'll get a home equity loan versus what we're going to charge you. I'm not a tax person, to know what the impact is on your income taxes, and I think it's different for everybody compared to where they are, but those are things you might want to look at over the coming years, if how you want to deal with that. But.
Motion second, further discussion. Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Once again, thank you for coming out. John, you were kind of the representative, I believe. So we'll be keeping in touch with John to make sure you're up to date on what's happening. If that's okay, it'd be a little easier maybe.
We'll set up a link on our website where we'll be posting documents or things that occur so that rather than have to run down here and pay for copies, we'll try and keep that current. We will keep it current for you so you can look and see where we are at any given point in time. If you have any questions, after you look at that, by all means, give us a call. And we'll send out a letter with the link on there so you know where to look.
Okay. Is it possible? That concludes item 5, public hearing. Move on to item 6, citizens' comments.
After this.
Mr. Hayden signed up, but Mr. Hayden, you'll speak when your item comes up on the agenda, okay? We'll wait for your item so we can discuss it all at once, okay? There are no other sign-ups under citizen comment.
Anyone else wishing to speak under citizens' comments? Anyone else wishing to speak under citizens' comments? If not, I'm going to close citizens' comments. And before we move on to the administrator's report, we're going to take a 5-minute recess. Everybody can get their seats. Mr. Tunuta's this close to getting his item, I know. He gets up early, he works hard, he wants to go home. That brings us to item 7, administrator's report.
I've said all I care to say tonight.
There you go. Brings us to item 8, new business. First item being item 8. Receive the Planning Commission recommendation to consider ordinance 13-27 and 13-28 to rezone the property at 7804 Cooper Road from the R4 Urban Family Residential District with an urban landholding overlay district to R4 UHO PUD Urban Single Family Residential District with an urban landholding overlay district and a planned unit development overlay district to create the specific PUD district zoning regulations. This is for one single-family home development of the property. Gene, this must be yours.
Mr. President, this is a request by Mr. Tenuta and his wife for their property located at 7804 Cooper Road. They are requesting a zoning map and a text amendment this evening, and they are requesting to modify that zoning from R4 UHO to R4 UHO PUD. Primarily, this is a situation where there was one single-family home on the property. That property house was razed. They're looking to build a brand-new single-family house on this particular property in that R4 district. And what they're requesting is, because this is such a large property, 30-plus acres of land, they're asking for some consideration with the planned unit development in order to increase the number of accessory buildings on the particular property, as the typical R4 district only allows for 3 accessory structures. They're requesting up to 6. Again, they've got over 30 acres of land, most of it of which is wooded. And one of the other specific items within that PUD is that they are looking to have one of those accessory buildings or structures, a garage, to be up to 6,000 square feet. And this garage, as shown on the screen, would be located to the north-northwest of the existing house or the proposed house that they're looking to have. Just looking back, with respect to the placement of the garage, again, this is all wooded to the north, and there's trees and woods along to the west, to the south, and a lot of them up front. Where they're looking to place the proposed 6,000-square-foot garage, you'd barely be able to see it based on all the other environmental amenities on the particular property. So specifically, this is a matter that was before the Village Plan Commission at their last meeting. Again, they're looking for a zoning map amendment to add that PUD provision to their property. They're looking to have up to 6 accessory structures. They are looking to have the largest accessory structure be 6,000 square feet. They have agreed to comply with the requirements as set forth by the fire department with respect to sprinkling this particular building and putting in early warning detection systems so that a building of this size has the adequate protection from a municipal fire protection standpoint. Two other items that they're looking to modify is that typically a swimming pool is not put into the street yard. Sometimes it's put in a rear street yard. In this case, they have a front and a rear street yard, but they may want to put a swimming pool in, and we are under these provisions allowing that it could go in the front yard no closer than 100 feet to Cooper Road. Again, I'm not sure that they're entirely interested in doing that, but we wanted to outline that possibility for them. And then finally, there's some historic stone pillars that were at the front entrance of their driveway on Cooper Road. Based on their need to widen that driveway to be able to get construction vehicles and other vehicles in and out of their property, they're looking to modify and they may need to reconstruct those stone pillars. And if they do that, they are looking to do them at the same height, which is at least 6 feet, where our typical fence or hedge or entrance monuments are only four feet in the street yard. And then they'd also like to be able to reconstruct them just inside the right-of-way. One of the situations is typically we have not allowed for any type of fences or stone pillars or anything like that to be in a right-of-way unless an indemnification is signed by the particular property owner. And we've added some other provisions. For example, it cannot impact in any way the Village Public Works efforts in snow plowing and maintaining Cooper Road. And we need to make sure that it's not going to be an issue or concern or problem for any future potential widening of Cooper Road, when and if that ever does happen. It's really considered more of a rustic road for the village. So I'm just going to scroll through a couple of more of the slides that we had. These are views of the garage. Again, that would be located northwest of the house. Any building over 3,500 square feet would have to be serviced with fire sprinklers. That's in the PUD provisions. It's the community benefit that has been defined as part of the approval of this planned unit development for this particular property. And then this again just shows the two views, different directions. Oops. And that's it, Mr. President. If there's any questions, the PUD does specifically outline some of the requirements for various sizes of accessory structures. If it's, you know, this size to this size, then these setbacks. And that language really has all been brought from the existing zoning ordinance, but we just put it into the PUD as a reminder of what those regulations would be.
Thank you, Gene.
I think this could be beautiful for that area. Dessert property was nice to look at for years, but if you got up close to it, it wasn't that pretty. This will be a very nice development. I move approval of the zoning map and zoning text amendment ordinance 1327 and 1328.
Second. Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any other discussion?
I would just like to say at the Plan Commission meeting, you saw a lot of the neighbors and residents turn out in support of this project, and that just goes to show you that everyone in the neighborhood is in favor of it. It's a well-thought-out plan. Welcome to the village, Chris.
And this is a great piece of property, and I don't think there could be a better use for it than what you're doing with it. So we're excited about it and hope everything goes well. And with that, we have a motion and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item B, and that is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider Ordinance 13-29 to amend the definition of auxiliary permitted use in Section 420-152 of the Village Zoning Ordinance.
Mr. President, members of the board and the audience, on March 11, 2013, the Plan Commission adopted a resolution to initiate some amendments to the Village's comprehensive plan and the zoning ordinance text and the zoning maps. These changes and modifications were put forth in order to create a new M5 production manufacturing zoning district. This district would allow for specific manufacturing, production, and office uses located on properties located adjacent to the Lakeview Corporate Park. On June 17, the Plan Commission held a public hearing, and the board adopted the new M5 zoning district regulations, as well as the comprehensive plan and the zoning map amendments for this new district. Again, just as a reminder, the M5 district was a good, sound public policy decision of the village. While there still may have been and still are sufficient economic opportunities for construction of warehouses and distribution facilities in the corporate park, it's important to conserve our land resources and our economic infrastructure support in order to assist in providing new employment opportunities. This new district, again, as a reminder, serves to promote and encourage production, manufacturing, and office uses, and those that support that type of employment as primary uses in the village. Secondary uses would be warehousing uses in these particular in this particular district. So one of the things that we needed to do as part of our amendment is that we needed to modify an auxiliary permitted use definition because there are a couple of phrases in there that didn't make a whole lot of sense based on the way we were now going to be using it in this particular district and throughout the rest of the districts. So the modifications that we made are to clarify that auxiliary permitted uses are intended to be secondary. So in this case, warehouses are considered secondary uses within this M5 district. And then to clarify that for retail or service auxiliary uses, it's designed to serve the needs of the occupants of the principal building, has no dedicated outside entrance to the building, and has no signage visible from the exterior of the building. So we've used this word auxiliary as it relates to commercial-related uses as well as manufacturing. But this just helps to clarify that point so that there's no confusion with respect to the M5 district. The staff and the Plan Commission recommend approval.
Motion to approve Ordinance 13-29.
Second. Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item C, consider resolution 13-16 to initiate the change of address for 5029 93rd Street, and that is inappropriately assigned.
Mr. President, members of the board, resolution 13-16 is a resolution to initiate the change of an official address in Pleasant Prairie. The Board of Trustees may change the official address of a property when it's been brought to the village's attention that the address of an existing property may cause problems due to it being out of sequence, or it could create a problem for emergency response personnel, deliveries, or other persons trying to relocate to a particular property. The there is an existing home, as noted with the star, south of 93rd Street, west of Cooper Road, that has an address of 5029 93rd Street. As you remember, as part of the Devonshire development, the second phase, Cooper Road was to be extended to the south. And when Cooper Road was going to be extended to the south, this particular home was either going to be moved, relocated, or an address assignment correction had to be made because no longer did it fall within the proper sequencing. Well, that particular development has gone through a foreclosure process, and a new owner developer has purchased that property, Double D Two Investments LLC. And at this time, they've just purchased all of the property, but they're not intending to develop at this time. They're looking to submit, though, a certified survey map to subdivide off this particular home and lot and dedicate a portion of Cooper Road, but they are not going to be proceeding with any mass development at this point. But because of that CSM that's going to be presented to you next month, the address for the home that's going to be west of Cooper Road did need to be reassigned. Someone is going to be moving into that home and occupying it for a period of time. So the purpose of this resolution, again, is to initiate the process by which this address change can be promptly evaluated by the village staff and notices can be put together. The board, by this resolution, is not making any determinations regarding the merits of the proposed change, but just initiating the process by which we would hold the public hearing for you to consider this change. And the public hearing for this particular matter is going to be scheduled next month in August. The staff recommends approval of resolution 13-16.
John. Mike, is that house empty right now?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been empty for quite some time.
It has.
Oh, yeah.
Is it inhabitable?
Yes. The I think it's the brother-in-law of the owner, has been monitoring it, and my understanding is that they will probably submit for some remodeling work. Okay. But my understanding is that it's intended to be occupied.
Okay. So we'll approve the resolution.
Okay, I'll second it with a comment. So if we have a public hearing, nobody's living in it, so...
Well, the owner will be notified,
right,
and we will send
anybody's change of address as far as their bank account and everything else.
No, I don't believe
okay.
so.
Big deal.
Yeah. A motion by Steve, second by Mike. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item D, consider award of contract. It's for the construction of a final public improvements for the Whispering Knolls subdivision. And do you want to do the E together or just separately?
We can do them together.
And also item E, to consider a professional construction engineering inspection services agreement for the Whispering Knoll subdivision final public improvements.
And D.
And F, consider an award of contract for the installation of trees in the Whispering Knoll subdivision.
Mr. President, members of the board, we've gone through a lot of this prior, but up here on the board, we have the actual components of the contract for the final paving. Again, it's the asphalt, final asphalt layer, the patching, curb and gutter repairs, manhole adjustments, the sidewalk and miscellaneous repairs. Again, this is the, it shows the subdivision. We bid this project on June 20th. We got two bids. The low bid was from Payne and Dolan for $379,242.46. I'm recommending, and again, this is the number that we used in the assessment calculation. I'm recommending that the contract be awarded to Payne and Dolan. Also just wanted to note this is under the original estimate that we had for the paving. So I guess I can go to the next one, too, if we're going to do them all together. This, we also have a contract to do the construction-related services for the project, which would include the contract administration, the construction staking, survey, and inspection. This is a... estimated fee on an hourly basis. Again, we monitor during the project to keep that in line. This fee is $15,673. And again, that was included in the previous assessment estimate. This one is for the street trees. Again, we got two bids to install the remaining 54 trees. Again, the drawing there shows the red dots show the 54 trees. Just a point of information, out of the 54 trees, 40 of them are associated with the lots that are still owned by Whispering Knoll LLC. So unfortunately, there's 14 that are by owners that have recently built. So the low bid was from Kenosha Grounds Care for $18,635. Breezy Hill also bid. I'm recommending that the contract be awarded to Kenosha Grounds Care Incorporated.
So moved. Got to be separate.
You got three motions here, Steve. Which one would you like? You got to do item D first.
Okay. First one would be for the award of the contract to Payne and Dolan.
I may move to approve the contract for Payne and Dolan.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Clyde for award of contract for the public improvements for the Whispering Knoll subdivision. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries.
Then the next motion would be for the execution of the contract for construction services.
Make a motion to approve.
Motion by Clyde, second by Mike for adoption of an engineering inspection services agreement for the Whispering Knoll subdivision. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries.
Move approval of Kenosha Grounds Care, $18,635.
Second. Motion by Mike, second by Clyde for adoption of the installation of street trees in Whispering Knoll subdivision. Any further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. That completes items D, E, and F. That brings us to item G, consider an award of contract for the relocation of sanitary manhole as part of the WSDOT State Highway 50 I-94 interchange project.
Mr. President, members of the board, this item is related to the work that the Wisconsin Department of Transportation is doing at State Highway 150 and I-94. As part of that project, they're doing frontage road improvements on the East Frontage Road, 116th Avenue. There's an existing sanitary sewer manhole that needs to be relocated because during the construction, it'll end up being in the curb. So this contract is to move this manhole to the east and outside of the new pavement. We solicited a number of bids. This is the location off 116th Avenue. It's just adjacent to the Super 8 Motel. And we got three bids. The low bid was from Reisman's for $8,120. This work will be reimbursed by the DOT with an agreement that we have with them. So I'm recommending that this contract be approved for the Reisman's excavating and grading.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde for award of this contract. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item H, consider the request of Victor Hayden to amend Chapter 119 of the Municipal Code relating to vicious dog license requirements.
Mr. President and board members, as you will recall, on June 12th, there was a special hearing regarding the vicious dog determination and the appeal of Mr. Hayden at that time to not agree with the police chief's determination, and the board voted that Tyson was deemed a vicious animal. So since that date, Mr. Hayden's been in several times working to license his dog as a vicious animal. He's talked to the police chief and worked with the police department as well. To date, and I had the ordinance in the file, so you can kind of follow along. He did submit a certificate of inoculation from the veterinarian, and the police department has inspected the fencing and the signage, and they've approved that. So what's outstanding is a certificate of liability insurance covering health and personal injury in the amount of $500,000 and property damage in the amount of $100,000. And we've not received information from a veterinarian that Tyson has been neutered. And Mr. Hayden indicated that a microchip was already placed in Tyson, and we just need the information on that chip rather than that tattooing of the license number in the thigh. We need to know what that information says on the chip, and the police and chief and I have talked about that. So as you can see from your information, Mr. Hayden filed a request for the board to amend the ordinance to change the requirements with respect to the insurance and the neutering of the dog. And as you will remember, there was a 30-day requirement for all this to take place, but since the letter was filed last week in discussion with the police chief and Mike, we decided not to take any action until Mr. Hayden had his time here tonight to discuss this with the board. So that's where we're at this moment. So if you need to talk to Mr. Hayden, come up and explain, that's what he's requesting.
Okay, Mr. Hayden, you're looking for to amend Chapter 119. What would you suggest as amendments?
Can I just have your name and address for the record then?
Victor Hayden, Sr., 12137 Sheridan Road, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Mr. President, I'm not a homeowner, I'm a renter, and the most that they will give a renter is $300,000 instead of the $500,000. I've did everything that the board and the ordinance wants me to. But as far as the insurance, they won't insure me because I'm not a homeowner. That's the most they'll do is $300,000.
I guess one of my questions is, would you be able to secure a $300,000?
I have it.
I mean, you're saying that's all they'll give you, but...
I have it.
And this is for a dog, vicious dog?
Right, the ordinance requires that.
The owner of a vicious dog that's been determined vicious be able to post for the village a liability policy in the amount of $500,000. You know, the ordinance is that's a fairly old amount. You know, typically, you know, 30 years ago that was a rather large amount. It doesn't distinguish between owner or tenant or whatever. That's the amount that's established by the ordinance for going forward. Mr. Hayden had approached the clerk saying he wanted to do $300,000, and the ordinance doesn't give us that latitude to make that determination. You know, for any other dog that's been deemed to be vicious, that's the amount that we require the owner to post.
Do you have a legitimate quote from an insurance company?
Yes, sir. I have everything that...
$214 policy, $300,000 coverage each occurrence.
And it lists animal in there.
Yeah, I think so.
As Mr. Polakoff said, even in today's standards, $500,000 is a low number.
Now, where does it say animal? Where does it say you're insuring the dog?
I don't understand.
It can't be just insuring your personal property, dwelling, or contents. The dog has to be in there because the dog is the key issue here.
That's my insurance agents know it's for the dog. So it's $300,000.
It has to list specifically the animal in there. And the fact that they are willing to stand behind that.
It doesn't specifically say that an animal or a dog. It's just...
Well, that's what she wrote up for me. Jan.
Okay, that's...
I think what the ordinance anticipates is everybody should have insurance on their belongings and for liability anyway. What the ordinance is looking for you to do is to go to your agent... Identify. I have a dog that's been deemed to be vicious. I need to insure this animal for $500,000, so that the insurance company knows that they're not just giving you an umbrella of $300,000 or $500,000. That you are in fact specifically seeking insurance on, what damages your dog could do. It's not just a general $300,000 umbrella.
I was confused on that. I went to my agent. I told her she knows it's for the dog. And she said the most that I can insure, since I'm not a homeowner, is $300,000. That's what my agent is telling me.
But on a policy, it will tell you what is covered, what protections you have.
But, Mr. President, I'm going to need more time.
Who's paying for the care of the animal right now?
I am. I mean...
Okay, we'll give more time.
The village is paying for it?
I'm paying for it.
Have you made a payment?
Yes, I have. I've been making weekly payments on them. I'm up to over $1,200. Over $1,200.
What about the neutering of the dog?
Well, I was going to, because neutering doesn't stop a dog from biting a person. So I was planning on putting one of those behavioral collars around him. That was another option.
Yeah. Well, that.
A collar only works if somebody's there to use it.
Could you show Mr. President?
I'm not gonna bend on the neutering, but I will consider to the next board meeting. If you can come in with an insurance policy that will cover that dog.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if that's an unreasonable request. I don't. Two more weeks.
Self-permission.
Who's the insurance company?
Allstate.
It's a renter's policy, but it doesn't.
Right, a renter's policy is totally different than covering an animal.
You have to mention the animal too. That's the main issue.
Right.
Mr. President, I guess the agenda item is to consider a request to amend Chapter 119. At this point in time, we're not going to consider. It appears to not to consider amending Chapter 119. Regardless, none of these requirements have been met, and the $300,000 would be a consideration to ask to lower that. But I can't see saying the neutering not being done and the information on the microchip. So at this point in time, why would we want to consider amending Chapter 119?
Well, as far as neutering him, he's I can't move him until I get other things. Now I can't even touch my dog to have him neutered. If I had the $500,000 policy, I would have been able to move Tyson, and then I would have came in to try to amend. Not neutering him and doing the behavioral collar, but I couldn't. I'm thinking that the insurance was the most that I could get. That's how I went to my insurance agent, and the way she was coming to me was that I could only get $300,000. That's why when she told me that, that's when I came in.
$300,000 is what a renter can get. Not.
Well,
a renter would have.
Mr. President, I've never
had a vicious dog.
I've never had a vicious dog.
Okay.
And their plan with him at the kennel.
That needs to be clarified with your agent.
And the people at the kennel is playing with Tyson. They're making him do tricks.
All right.
You know, I think just so the board understands. I mean, you know, your action tonight. I mean, the only action you take is to consider an ordinance. If you want to direct the staff to modify the ordinance, we could do that. What you know, the owner of the dog has to do is you know, find it someone that'll secure the insurance for it, you know, for the $500,000 in lieu of an ordinance change, and you know, really the ordinance. I mean, I think that and it increases the risk in the sense that if you know somebody had $300,000 and they owned the property, they had some collateral equity that would protect someone who was attacked by the dog. In that case, this doesn't exist. I think it's more critical, in this case, that the $500,000 you know take place. Secondly, Mr. Hayden's wrong. If in fact you get the $500,000 policy to cover the dog can be neutered where it's at. You don't have to take it anyplace. That work could take place, you know, right where at the shelter where it's at. And then the dog can be released to you because then you've met all the requirements. If what you're saying is you're not going to neuter the dog,
well,
the discussion is moot.
I was on neutering the dog. I've talked to quite a few people. Neutering a dog doesn't stop a dog from biting. It doesn't stop a dog from biting, neutering the dog. I mean, in that ordinance, You had to tattoo them. There's different techniques now. They have chips now. They have these behavioral collars. You don't have to neuter a dog. He's a champion. He's a champion in the making. And I plan on sending Tyson to school, a military school. He's a bull master. I mean, I'm trying to work. I'm trying to work with the board. If there's a way for me to get a $500,000 policy, then I'm going to find that way. But I went to my agent, and that's what she told me. So I'm thinking that I can't get covered.
Okay,
I need some time.
I'm not willing to go along to wait 2 weeks here. If you can, in fact, I'm a little perplexed why we even have 500,000 these days. I think that policy, that number needs actually to be increased. When you look at today's liability out there and the cases out there, this is the village that's at risk when we do this. And the village makes up the difference. So, unfortunate to Mr. Hayden, I would want to be going in the other direction to increase the 500,000 to protect the village, protect the residents.
Chief, do you have something to add here? Could you add something to this?
I guess what I've got to add is if the ordinance needs to be relooked at or updated, fine, we can do that. But as far as neutering goes, I just don't buy the argument that it's not a remedy for an aggressive animal. It's been a remedy for aggressive animals for decades. I mean, that is what they've done to take the aggression mode out of animals, that and population control. So I think the argument that it's not going to stop somebody from biting just doesn't fly. I think that needs to stay in there. And Mr. Hayden knew that it had to stay in there. So the fact that he couldn't get his hands on the dog to have it neutered, I don't buy that either. I think he has made some strides. We've looked at his property. He has made some investment in his property to come into the code. And he has done the signage. He's done the kennel area. I'm not sure if he's done the mask for the dog if it's out in public. Okay. But the two things that are huge is that everybody else has come in compliance with, or they've come into compliance with having their dogs either moved from the area or put down, is that insurance policy. That insurance policy protects not only the village, but it protects our public as well.
All right. Thanks, Chief. I would like to suggest that we give Mr. Hayden 2 more weeks to see if he can insure this dog in accordance with the ordinance, including having it neutered. And I'll give you 2 more weeks to see if you can get insurance for this dog. And if you can get to $500,000 insurance, then we'll take it up at the next board meeting.
What I would suggest is I don't think it has to keep coming back to the board. I think you should, if you're going to extend it, you would extend it a time specific. So at that time, if nothing happens, they go all with what Attorney Camilli recommended, a court order to either the dog sold or transferred.
Or put down.
But it doesn't have to come back to the board.
Okay.
The ordinance is what it is. And so if you're not willing to amend the ordinance,
right.
then
as Clyde said, what's before us is to amend the chapter 1.
So make it a date specific so we can get on with the police chief and the attorney Camilli to take care of this matter. It doesn't have to keep coming back to the board. We've already been there.
Question. And also with that, any expense associated with this be borne by him and not the village. So if there isn't payment being made on whatever the costs are here, the extension ends.
I'm making the payments on my dog. My question is, as far as you're telling me the transfer of sale, what do you mean by that?
Mr. Hayden, you've had three copies of the ordinance.
I don't understand it. I don't understand the transfer. How can I transfer this dog or sell it?
You can transfer the dog by getting it insured and having it neutered, and then you can move it to another community. Or you can leave it here. But those two things have to happen.
And if I can't insure, then Tyson is put down.
Well, at that point, then you can't comply with the ordinance, then, the dog would have to be put down.
If he's put down, can I get the remains cremated?
Yeah. Right.
Would the board give me the remains to cremate?
Yeah.
You gotta pay for the cremation.
For it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to pay for the cremation.
Right, I pay for the cremation.
So we look for a. Mr. President, there's a motion for a date, a new date for when, Oh, that's right. But he has to comply by.
Right, he just has to comply. I'm going to make a motion to deny the request to amend Chapter 119.
Motion by Clyde, second by Mike for denial.
But I have to remind you that the 30 days is up. July 12th is up. So you're not giving them any time because so that's what I'm saying. The 30 days is up as of July 12th. If you're going to give them extra time, make a date specific for him to take care of what he can or can't.
Let's do that.
Okay. I understand the motion is to deny the amendment of the ordinance. But if you're going to give Mr. Hayden some extra time to try to get his policy, make it a date specific so at that time we can start where Attorney Camilli indicated, July 12th would have happened, right. 30 days out, for him to either, for us to take action to finally
Okay.
get to
us.
I will amend that to extend Mr. Hayden's request to the first board meeting in August. Is that correct?
We don't have to come back to the board.
Okay.
Pick a date. It could be July 26th is a week from Friday, so that would be almost 2 weeks. You could pick
July
that date.
26th it is.
And that is making sure that all the payments are made.
Correct. With all payments made.
Because if the payments aren't being made, all bets are off. Here.
Yes. Yes. That is extension.
So you're denying the amendment to the ordinance and giving Mr. Hayden to July 26th. To either
comply
with the ordinance, license his dog, get the insurance policy, have the dog neutered, or else the village goes to take court action like he was instructed to either. Okay.
As long as the payments have been made.
Okay. And payments. Okay.
Taxpayers don't need to be on the hook for this.
Do you want to make a motion to accept a friendly amendment to have that time period prepaid so we would know ahead of time.
Exactly.
That the payment has been made.
Now, Mr. President, you're talking, what payments are you talking about? What
for
payments?
For the storage and kennel care.
Care and handling of your dog at the...
Okay. You're talking about the kennel.
The kennel.
The humane society.
And any costs associated with it.
Right. Vet or whatever the...
And the word prepayment has been put into it. So you want the extension, prepayment is made.
July 26th,
right.
With denial of any ordinance amendment.
Now, if I get the policy, say I get the policy tomorrow.
And the dog has to be neutered. We'd have to have a certificate that the dog was neutered.
Then he can come home.
And the payments are all made, is what you were saying. Any payment for any kennel care or anything was made.
Right.
He can come home.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Sounds like you'll comply with the ordinance. Yep. And the information from the microchip. We just need a veterinarian certificate that says, what does that microchip say?
You got a copy.
I have a copy of that. Is that on the inoculation certificate? I didn't see that. When was that done?
That was
Okay. And with the information that says what it says. Okay. I see. Okay. So the two big items, the insurance policy and the neutering certificate. And he has to July 26th, and we'll check. And prepayment of all fees from the where he's being kept.
To that date.
To that date. So.
Okay, with the motion a second.
Any further discussion?
Do we need to add the...
Oops. Do we need to add the part about if he wants him cremated, he needs to pay for the cremation and the remains?
Remains to be turned over to him.
Yeah,
he can do what he wants.
He can do whatever he wants.
Okay.
We have a motion. We have a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So carries.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Good luck. Item I is to consider disallowance of a claim submitted by Janine Lee for injury occurred at the Recplex on January 18, 2012.
Mr. President, we received a claim for damages by Janine Lee for a fall at the Recplex. We turned this over to our insurance company for review. Based on their review, they recommend the claim be disallowed. and I'm bringing that recommendation to board for the board to take a recommendation to disallow the claim so that we can start the clock for any additional claims to be made. So.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Monica. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So carries. Item J, consider disallowance of a claim submitted by Ricardo Rojas for damage to a vehicle caused by a parking lot gate arm at the Recplex on February 20th, 2013.
Mr. President, again, this is a claim that's been submitted at the Recplex. We've forwarded that to our insurance company for investigation. They've indicated that the review that the Recplex was not negligent, that the issue with the gate was, is with the manufacturer of the gate, and they recommend that the claim be denied.
So moved.
Second, how did that accident happen?
I think gate just came down randomly.
Malfunctioned. But the whole stand is moved.
No, somebody hit it for that.
Oh, you mean there was something else?
Yeah, something else.
Okay. We have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item K, Ordinance 13-30 to amend Chapter 242, Municipal Code relating to the Recplex membership fees.
Mr. President and members of the board, I'd like for you to consider amendment number 13-30. During the recent difficult economic years, the Recplex has been able to maintain membership rates despite our rising costs. And as we all know, staff has taken great pride in having a wonderful facility. It's kept up to the utmost, and we'd like to continue maintaining the facility in the standard. The building is now about 13 years old, and we're faced with different needs and maintenance. We've had a couple of air units go this year, and we just are faced with the fact that we need to propose a membership increase for the first time in 2.5 years to keep up with our rising costs. The proposal is a primary adult member rate increase of $3 per month and a secondary adult member rate increase of $2 per month. Also, for the first time ever, there's a facility fee increase for new members of $25, making it $125, and for our corporate membership, it's $15 more, so instead of $50, it'd be $65. Also, in this ordinance change, there is a corporate partner membership type that has been allowed by the board in the past through sponsorship agreements, but it is not in the ordinance. So we'd like to include that corporate partner membership into the ordinance. I'd like to note that we're not increasing senior or youth member rates at all, and these rates would go into effect on September 1st, 2013. We do need to notify our memberships of any rate increase. As I stated, we have not increased the rates for 2.5 years. This is a 6% increase of these two membership types, the primary and secondary.
And with all hopes that we would not increase again in another 2 years. So it basically, or 2.5 years, it would be a 1.2% increase over 5 years. That is it. I hope the board would, the recommendation is to accept this ordinance change.
Motion to approve ordinance 13-30.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve for adoption of ordinance 13-30. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Item L is considered denial of a second invoice submitted by Ron Sierra, who perceived use payments on parcel number 93-4-123-203-0200.
Mr. President, the claim du jour is Mr. Sierra is for equal amount of last time with along with interest penalties. I recommend this claim be denied. We've also forwarded this to our insurance carrier to defend the village from the action that Mr. Sierra is taking. So I request that this claim payment be denied.
Second. Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any further discussion?
One question. Does the property in Lakeshore Drive, the west side?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Motion a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item M, consider reappointments to the Community Development Authority.
Mr. President, I'm recommending that John Steinbrink and Monica Uhas be reappointed for terms of 1 year to the Community Development Authority.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Mike. Any discussion? Do we vote on this or do we not vote on this?
Yeah. No, you vote.
We vote? I get to vote for myself?
Yeah.
This is a great country.
This is a good time we're having up here.
We have a motion.
Now, if you don't
second.
Like it when you're there, you have to remember you voted for yourself.
Yeah,
you
I know. So. Motion and a second. No further discussion. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item N, consider approval of operator license applications on file and denial of the operator license application submitted by Adam Roca.
This is pretty easy. There are two applications tonight for approval for Ariana Sanders and Molly Thompson. And as you can see from the information the police chief has supplied for the application of Adam Roca, he is not to possess or consume alcoholic beverages and is not to be in taverns or any premises located for the sale of intoxicating beverages at restaurants. So he, according to the chief, does not meet our matrix because of his probation. So I would recommend, as well as the police chief, that we deny this operator license.
And for which establishment is this for?
Well, it wouldn't make a difference.
Wouldn't make a difference.
But it actually was for, I believe, it was Chili's. I think it was Chili's.
Okay.
Chili's. Yeah. And the probation started in May, and it's for a year at this point, and that's what the record shows.
All right.
I'll make a motion to approve the two recommended and motion to deny.
Okay.
Adam Roca.
Motion by Clyde, second by Mike for adoption of the two applications and denial. Concurrence with the denial operator license application submitted by Adam Roca. Further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Item 9, village board comments.
Don't forget this coming Saturday, we're going to have the first concert by the lake. It was about 6 o'clock.
And 116th is looking good, Mike. Looks like the second lift is on, and all they're going to have to do is stripe. So. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde for adjournment. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries.
Executive board member.